I know that previously you were going in a direction. I interrupted you for some clarification. So I want to go back in the direction I think you were going to go, which had to do with kind of trends that you've noticed in the NCNRs during these periods of capacity constraints, right?
Right.
You've touched on that a bit here, but please elaborate on that.
Sure. So I'll say that in general, NCNR in a capacity constrained environment is really about a couple of things. It's about, number one, stability in production planning. NCNR orders provide a level of stability in the production planning process. You know, when a manufacturer is facing capacity constraints, it's really crucial to have a clear understanding of the demand that needs to be met. And NCNR orders ensure that a certain volume of that production is guaranteed, allowing them, the manufacturer, to be able to allocate resources more effectively. It also has to do with priority allocation. Manufacturers may need to prioritize which orders to fulfill first. You might recall shortage of medical equipment like ventilators, and they in a constrained environment, there were very conscious decisions made to be able to put NCNR orders in place to be able to guarantee capacity for being able to provide medical equipment. And NCNR orders, again, given higher priority because they're legally binding and cannot be canceled without penalty. And it allows a manufacturer to fulfill the committed orders before considering other requests. You know, from a manufacturing side, it certainly mitigates risk. Capacity constraints lead to risks as overcommitting to orders. And in the case of, you know, late 2020, 2021, I think it's pretty obvious to everyone in the supply chain that there were a lot of people scrambling for parts. And so there was double ordering and what I called at the time alternate ordering, where a customer could not get access to this microprocessor or that, you know, analog product. And they started having their R&D teams work on alternative bills of materials to be able to, for them to be able to get their product out the door. And so a lot of these customers of the electronics component supply chain had orders for alternative components and the original components on the books at the same time, and just hoping that they could get something to be able to build orders. And while I understand the desperation that and desperate times yield desperate measures, NCNR orders mitigate the risk by ensuring the customers are fully committed to their orders and they cannot cancel them without consequences. You know, as well as capacity constraints, with, I think people know that resources, human resources, were at a premium during the pandemic as well. And so manufacturers and everybody along the supply chain needed to be able to manage resources efficiently. And knowing that that portion of their capacity is dedicated to NCNR orders allows them to be able to allocate labor, materials, and equipment accordingly to avoid overcommitment and overextension. You know, it also really helps to set customer expectations. As much as customers were probably frustrated by NCNR, at least those NCNR orders gave some better assurances of when that limited capacity, those limited products, could be shipped for those customers to be able to better plan their production lines. So, you know, all these things put together, it's really, you know, again, not a desired state of business in the electronic component supply chain, but there are a lot of things that of good things that do come out of putting these NCNR orders in place. Now, I understand there's a lot of frustration now because the term that we use in the supply chain is overhang. We've had NCNR overhang in this. So as supply has caught up with demand, and actually demand has gone down a fair amount to be able to allow supply to be able to catch up, you still have these NCNR orders on the books. And the question has always been, when do manufacturers and again, upstream raw material suppliers and wafer fabs, when do they release those NCNR terms? And that's always a delicate conversation back and forth between the customer and the supplier. And I think that these really started very strongly in earnest, say, at Electronica last year. You know, and at the end of 2022, that's when people understood that the economy was starting to soften, that that there was going to be extra inventory, and there were a lot of delicate conversations back and forth between customer and supplier and distributor about how much of that backlog was going to be allowed to be flexible, if not canceled, at least rescheduled somewhat. And a lot of rescheduling did start happening in Q4 of 2022 into 2023. And, you know, as much as a frustration as that NCNR overhang is for customers, I'll say it's also a really tricky thing from a manufacturer's perspective, because manufacturers are usually public companies. They've reported backlog. They've reported obviously financial results, and figuring out how they can back off those NCNR orders without seeing their revenue just immediately go in the tank is a very delicate situation for CEOs and CFOs to be able to manage expectations with the street. So, you know, while there is some ability to be able to be flexible, at the same time, the certain manufacturers have to balance what their commitments are to the street and to their shareholders as far as what their performance is going to be. And, you know, it's always a tricky thing to be able to figure out how much flexibility do you give to end customers. You know that you've still got to be competitive market if your competitors are relenting on NCNR. You may have to be able to give a little bit more, but it's all about trying to then try to balance your production through the down cycle. The downside of the peak, and be able to keep manufacturer lines running, to be able to keep fab people employed and operations people employed through the down cycle, to the point that you then get back in an up cycle where we get back into balance again between supply and demand.
So I appreciate that. You know, interesting, a lot of nuggets in there. Let me ask though, yeah, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking this isn't the first cycle this industry has gone through, clearly, no. Right? And no. And so if I look at this, and I don't know, if you were to compare this to previous ones, and I don't, maybe from an NCR perspective and overall, was NCR such an issue in previous cycles as it seems to be today?
Well, let's draw some parallels. Probably the closest cycle. Well, back up for a second. You know, the electronic components market, especially semiconductors, have run like clockwork on a boom bust cycle every 4 to 5 years for the last 40 years. There's always a catastrophe around the corner. Whenever you think things are good, something's going to come and bite you, and it's going to affect business. It can be the dot-com bust in 2001. It can be the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. And the electronics, the electronic components supply chain is a really interesting study in efficiency and its resiliency, because, I say that when the economy catches a cold, the electronic components supply chain catches pneumonia. And it has to do with how extended that supply chain is, from raw materials that go all the way back to sand, you know, to be able to create wafers, to all of the thousands, tens of thousands of chemicals that are used in fabs, to the foundries, to the OEM component OEMs, to distributors, to EMS. You know, in the automotive business, you've got automotive OEMs that are feeding tier ones, that are feeding EMS. And, you know, it's like, I like to give the analogy that it's like being on a crowded highway, and you're on a highway and you run into a big traffic jam, and you crawl along for about 2 miles, and you get up to the point where traffic's flowing again, and there's no accident, there's no lane closure, and you think, wow, why did
that? Yeah,
why was there this traffic jam here? Yeah. And it's just, it's sort of like the supply chain is like the highway, that all it takes is a few people to be able to tap on their brakes, and it creates a bottleneck, and that backs up way up the supply chain, and people tend to overreact, just like you do on the highway. People don't want to run into the guy in front of them. You know, they want to leave sufficient following distance. And so in the case of the electronic supply chain, usually when there are supply perturbations, and it can be around a minor business cycle in the macro economy, it can be a recession, things like that, the supply chain tends to overreact. So the end customers really want to start drawing down inventory, distributors start drawing down inventory, supplier, you know, semiconductor manufacturers start drawing down inventory. Everything along that chain, everybody is tapping the brakes. And so then it ends up with a delayed, you end up with a traffic jam, and then you end up with, you know, a open sailing, you know, beyond there. And I'd say that if you look at previous cycles, probably the biggest recent comparison you can make is coming out of the financial crisis. You know, in 2010, we were in pretty tight capacity situation, and I would say that there's probably a similarity in the cycle, that people didn't know during the financial crisis if we were going to have financial meltdown around the world. People did not know in late 2020. Whether the pandemic was going to cause, you know, hundreds of millions of deaths, and whether it's going to destroy the economy. So everybody is tapping on the brakes. And then when people figure out that the world's not falling apart, the sky's not falling, then everybody gets on the accelerator again. And so everybody wants to get out of the traffic jam and get moving on their business. And everybody starts clamoring for product. So, yeah, I would say that 2010 was a reasonably similar period in the fact that there was a lot of capacity constraint. We knew there was a lot of double ordering going on in the business, and a lot of manufacturers put NCNR terms in place. I don't think that as many manufacturers invoked force majeure clauses in their contracts at that point. Some did, but certainly, you know, the pandemic, the more I think pulled the trigger on suspending their T's and C's and put a lot more on NCNR and so forth. So, you know, this is not the last cycle.
Right.
I hope it's the last pandemic, but we can't say that there's not going to be another one. There's a lot of others being talked about by the, you know, epidemiologists. And,
you know, as I like your image of the traffic, and what I think I'm hearing you saying is that what the industry needs is a Waze app, right? That tells you kind of what's on the road ahead, and you know, what's causing it and, you know, where the police are, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, something that gives that foresight throughout the environment in which it's operating. You know, that's that unattainable glass pipeline that people have been asking for decades, right?
That's right. Yeah, hopefully, I think that we all learn a lesson in each one of these many lessons. And I think that the one key lesson that ought to come out of this is that there are a lot of people that forced themselves to be direct customers in the supply chain over the last 10 to 15 years and found out that that the lack of flexibility of using the channel as a cushion certainly hurt them in this. Now, I mean, truth be told, distributors were short on product and they were clamoring for product to be able to ship their end customers with the extended length of this downturn, but at least it could have cushioned it on both ends. So I think supply chain resiliency, really looking at what the cost of lines down is compared to, you know, the cost of holding a little bit of extra internal inventory and working through the channel is really, really important lesson from this cycle. We're going to have more cycles. We're going to have more shortages. We're going to have more double ordering. We're going to have people clamoring for product. And we need to, all elements of the supply chain need to ensure that they're being a little bit cautious and trying to keep a little bit of extra flexibility in their supply chain to be able to help minimize the disruptions of future cycles.
Listen, you've been very generous with your time here, and I want to, this has been a very good conversation, so I appreciate you staying on with me. Let me kind of end by asking maybe you to give some advice. A lot of our listeners are EMS companies, right? Who are sitting on a lot of inventory, and that inventory overhang on them that's on their books impedes their business as well. So what's your view of the current inventory situation? What advice might you offer to companies like that who are looking to just flush it out so they can move on, right?
Well, I'd say a couple things. Number one, I'd say that, you know, talk with your suppliers. I'm sure that that most people are, and try to figure out what flexibility there is on the NCNR terms and being able to try to reschedule. I think there's more flexibility on the part of distributors and manufacturers today than there was several months ago. And I do believe that in general, the earnings results that I see, that people are working off inventory, maybe not as fast as they want. They've still got a little bit too much on their balance sheets, tying up capital. Certainly the whole supply chain hopes that they can work that off because they want healthy customers to be buying more product in the future. But I think you have to be able to look at the fact that there's going to be another upcycle. And I optimistically think that we're going to be at a point in early 2024 where we're going to have good balance between supply and demand. And I don't think that the world is falling apart from a macroeconomic standpoint. There may be maybe one more step in the Fed tightening. Who knows? And certainly the U.S. economy and a lot of the worldwide economy is resilient, has been more resilient, really, more surprisingly to me. I would have thought that we would have had a much bigger hit than we did. And we're going to see an upcycle, and it's going to be able to help everyone work off inventory and be able to get back into good balance. So work with your suppliers, work with your distributors, and try to get as much flexibility as you can, and try to make sure that you're planning for the future and making sure that you have a reasonable amount of buffer to be able to cushion when the inevitable upturn comes and we end up in a capacity constrained environment again.
There we go. There we go. That is an excellent message to end this interview on, David. That was excellent. I appreciated your comments there, and I know that our audience will as well. So this is my first time interviewing you, and you're a damn good interview. So we got to do this again sometime. So you have a very good perspective from your experience in the industry, and that clearly comes through. So
thank you.
Yeah. So thank you very much. Wish you well and hope to catch up in the future.
Likewise.
Thank you, sir.